Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
We live yet another day in the groundhog life, and I say good morning to one Chris Canty. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Dave. How you doing this morning?
Not too bad. I watched the Lion King TMZ special from Fox last night.
Tiger King. Not the Lion King. You watched the Tiger King.
I was like, what?
Yes, that is correct. Okay. I watched the Tiger King. You know, these people are nuts. They are just absolutely crazy people. It is unbelievable. Have you seen that thing yet?
Yeah, I actually checked it out last night myself. And just looking at Jeff Lowe and his wife and their babysitter, I'm trying to figure out, you know, who's the wife and who's the babysitter.
Yeah, it really is, and it
literally is a circus, and they're tigers too.
It is unbelievable. The one thing is, everyone is fully convinced, Rick, fully convinced that Carol Baskin killed her husband.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I haven't even seen it yet. I was watching Listen to Your Heart last night. I'm on board with that. I actually liked it, to be completely
honest.
That's a six
episode in and out kind of a thing, right? You're not committing a ton of time to it.
No, I'm not. I mean, this is not a huge commitment, and I actually like the fact that they're sprinkling music on top. So you're actually getting some, like, legitimate. Like, at one point last night, I looked at my wife. They had I'm not going to spoil for you, but one of the dates is, I mean, they went on a date and they had to, you know, sing a song together. And this guy sounded so unbelievable. I looked at my wife at one point. I said, did they record this? Because there's no way he sounds this good live. And she's like, no, this is probably live. It was amazing. It was amazing, and then there's just enough craziness too sprinkled in, so you'll like
it. Nice. Now, you recommend the show. You give it two thumbs up. You enjoy it, and you'd recommend it for other people?
Well, you know I love The Bachelor, period.
Yes.
Cassie loves The Bachelor, period. So just on top of it, and I love music, so on top of it now you have like really gifted musicians that play. I mean, one guy can play the piano unbelievable, one guy plays the piano and the guitar. I mean, they're sitting there staring like – They're trying to get the role, so the guy's like, you know, so desperate. He's like, oh, I wrote you this song. And he just whips out a guitar and just starts playing this unbelievable song. And she just, I mean, she just melts her. I mean, it's good. You'll like it.
Okay. All right. I'm going to give it a try. All right. So it sounds like, guys, that the president is he's going to put together this commission of the, I guess, elite sports minds with Mark Cuban and Adam Silver and Bob Kraft and Jerry Jones and... And I guess they're going to have a call today to try to figure out a way to push sports forward. Here's the thing. It's very important for the president and for this regime and for sports, I believe, to get themselves back. Now, I don't know that anyone wants to risk anything as far as, you know, lives are concerned, but it seems that it is a very important task for this president, Chris, to get sports back up and running as soon as possible.
Well, I think the president is aware of how much sports is a part of our society. I mean, it's woven into the fabric of everything that we do. And so he recognizes, in terms of being able to signal to the public that things are moving in a positive direction, that we're getting on the other side of this pandemic, the return of sports would send that message to everybody loud and clear. So I think that's why they have so much urgency about trying to figure out a way, if there is one, about getting sports back to what we're used to, being able to get baseball underway, being able to finish the hockey season and the basketball season. Like, I think that's the motivation behind this. Now, we recognize that sports is not going to come back without the approval of Dr. Fauci and the top infectious disease experts in the country. But I think that he's going to try to get everybody together and see if they can devise a plan where we can get back to watching live sports.
Yeah, I mean, you've heard, I mean, and we've talked about this for the last couple of weeks. I mean, what would make the most sense, and again, it's all going to be dictated by, you know, what you're hearing from, you know, the federal government, what you're hearing from local governments, is finding, first and foremost, you know, places to have games. It seems like Arizona's on board. It seems like Florida's on board.
Yep.
And then trying to figure out, you know, the logistics of how you make that happen, how you keep your players safe, how you keep, you know, the trainer's safe, the coach is safe. I mean, because it's one thing with the players, too. I mean, you got a bunch of guys that are young guys in really good shape. But, I mean, you got some older coaches. You got some older trainers. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people involved in putting on these games. You got referees. I mean, so there's a bunch of stuff that goes into it. I mean, I love the fact that, you know, they seem motivated to try to get sports jump-started. But, I mean, the last thing you would want to do at this point is – with all the good that we've done with a vast majority of people, you know, taking it upon themselves to stay home, to social distance, and us to start flattening the curve, that all of a sudden, because, you know, sports has signaled to us that it's now safe, we're going to restart the economy, and now all of a sudden we erase all the good that we've done because we decided to do it too soon.
And then we're in big trouble. I mean, if and when that happens, if we push forward and, you know, for argument's sake, baseball starts in, I don't know, mid-June and they're locked away, wherever it is, and you have a setback and you have someone that becomes ill from corona or, God forbid, passes away from corona, you're done. I mean, I think all the other sports will not be able to resume, and I think that you push it back a long time. So I'm all for it, and God knows that I want every sport to be back and as soon as possible, but I think you really, really have to be careful, Chris, of starting it at the right time when you really are in a position where you know that the worst thing that happens is someone's going to get sick but recover rather than anything, God forbid, happens and you lose the other sports moving forward.
Yeah, Dave, it's not something that you can allow a situation where it's running rampant through a sport that's trying to start back up. Like, you can't allow that to happen. And so, you know, listening to some of the remarks by Dr. Fauci and what he saw in terms of sports making a return this summer, he was saying that you have to isolate the players in a hotel and you have to make sure that you test those guys routinely to make sure that they're not transmitting the virus to one another and you're not, you know, exacerbating an already bad situation. So I think that whatever path forward that we're going to have with sports returning, it's going to have to lean on rapid, reliable testing, and it's going to have to be in coordination with the CDC and other top public health officials. Like, that's to me the starting point. And if you don't have the systems in place that are capable of doing that, then we don't even need to have this conversation.
So here's what Fauci said. He was on a Snapchat conversation with Peter Hamby. There's a way of doing it, he says. Nobody comes to the stadium. That's it. Nobody. No fans, guys. No fans. For at a minimum of the summer moving forward, put the players in big hotels wherever you want to play, keep them very well surveilled, have them tested every single week, and make sure they don't wind up infecting each other or their family, and just let them play the season out. So any idea that you have that, oh, I'm going to be sitting in Yankee Stadium in July and, I mean, 92 degrees, and that's not happening. I mean, Fauci said this morning, you are going to have fanless games for a very long time, Rick. And that's true.
No, that's true, and it makes perfect sense. I mean, I think the bottom line with all this and all these conversations that we're having and, you know, trying to be creative and everything else, it's all going to be dictated by us getting some answers. I think that's why, you know, you read the, you know, reports from Jeff Passan that Major League Baseball is participating in the, you know, coronavirus antibody study. I mean, you need answers to these questions. Like, if we have players that have already had it and built up antibodies, I mean, can they get it again? I mean, there are so many questions that need to be answered. You have to find a way, because I'm sure, you know, probably, and I feel comfortable saying this, a majority of all these athletes would sign up and risk whatever the risk is to go play and get paid and everything else, because, I mean, that's what they do. That's their job. They're probably itching to go play. But, I mean, there's some people, too, that have to, I mean, would be uncomfortable doing it. And you have to answer, I mean, you have to put their minds at ease that, you know, what they're signing up for couldn't potentially be fatal. That would be my biggest concern, is there's not enough answers. And who the hell knows how, you know, Dave Rothenberg responds to the coronavirus as opposed to how Chris Canty or Rick DiPietro respond to it. You could be perfectly healthy, but all of a sudden, you know, just because your blood type or whatever it is. I mean, every story you read, I mean, you know, there's different information that you get, like, you know, some blood types are more susceptible or have a harder time, you know, dealing with the virus. So I think, I mean, just we're at a point. I appreciate everyone being motivated and all the different ideas going back and forth. But until we get more answers, more definitive answers, then we're in a holding pattern. You got to sit and wait and try to come up. My biggest thing would be try to come up with something that is feasible. You know, dot all your I's, cross all your T's. So the second you do feel comfortable, you can get this thing moving. Like, it's not like, okay, we got the go ahead. Now let's figure out what we're doing. As soon as you get the go ahead, everything has to be in place.
Yeah, and I guess the question is, how far are we away from that? I guess, is it golf that said June 11th, or I guess the rumors are surrounding golf that June 11th they're going to get back onto the course? I don't think it's the U.S. Open is going to take place then.
It's the Colonial.
The Colonial? Okay.
Down in Texas, yeah.
Okay. But whatever it is, I mean, who cares? If it's a legitimate golf tournament, I think people, at this point, if I told you there's going to be 4 days of golf this weekend, I think we'd all be glued to it, right?
No, I think everybody would be locked into it. And earlier this week, I told you guys it felt like golf would be the first sport to come back just because of the nature of it. But in looking at it right now, Dave, I mean, we're desperate for live sports. But we recognize the situation that we're in as a country and all of the different precautions that we're taking to try to flatten the curve and get to the other side of this pandemic. I think the most important thing is exactly what Rick said. It's about trying to get information right now on the virus. We still don't have a vaccine. We still don't have a treatment protocol. We don't know why it affects certain people more harshly than others. So I think that trying to go on a fact-finding mission and gathering all of this information is going to be a part of assessing when we can see sports return, because I know the athletes want to come back. Ballers want a ball, but they also have to understand the risk that's associated with it. And unless you have the information, you can't understand the risk. So I think that's the most important thing. And seeing the study that baseball is going to do with all of their employees, I think that's baseball trying to be a part of the solution to our national problem. But it's also something that baseball can do to try to help them wrap their arms around what they're dealing with in terms of their employees and get a better idea of how to try to navigate a path forward.
Yeah, I think, I mean, so what makes a lot of professional athletes, most professional athletes, great in what separates them from everybody else, I mean, why they get to that level is, I mean, they're willing to assume quite a bit of risk. I mean, whatever it is, as long as you have all the information, right? Like, I mean, that whole big scandal with, you know, the NFL and concussions. Everyone knew playing football was not great for your health.
Sure.
Like, you know, mm-hmm. bashing your head. But the fact, I mean,
we didn't really know it was that bad, though.
Exactly right. But that's what pissed people off. No, but exactly right. Like, you're a grown man. You make your own decision. You just want the facts. Lay it out to me. Here's what could potentially happen, and let me make an educated decision. I think once we get to that point where you can have an educated decision, like, here's what could happen. If you get it, we can treat it. You'll be sick for whenever. You'll get through it. We can quarantine you. It's not going to spread to the team. Then you'll feel more comfortable making the decision to uproot yourself and go to Arizona or Florida or North Dakota for the NHL for however long it is, because you realize that America needs it. You need it. Your family needs it. Your league needs it. Like, and I was listening to the K Show yesterday. The semantics of, you know, essential business, I get it. You know, wrestling in Florida is not essential business. Professional sports isn't essential business. We got to get past that a little bit. I think what the president is saying, what Dr. Fauci is saying, because even Dr. Fauci wants to see his Washington Nationals play, is that there is, and I'll keep saying this, there is the mental health aspect of this. I'm telling you right now. I mean, could you imagine if you're stuck in your house right now, and God forbid, for an extended period of time, We lost the ability to watch television or use the internet.
Oh my God!
What do you think would happen?
I think people would have
nervous
breakdowns. Yeah, I think people
would
completely lose it.
Completely lose it. Like, it would be a complete mess. That's the reality of it. Like, there needs to be TV, the internet, whatever it is. I mean, hopefully people are reading books. There needs to be some distraction from, I mean, the reality that this is an unknown. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. There is nothing when you wake up in the morning to say, you know what, if I battle through two more weeks of this, if I find a way.
Well, no, that would make it so much better.
No.
When you get sick and you feel like crap and you go to the doctor and the doctor's like, all right, you have bronchitis or pneumonia or strep throat or whatever it is. He says, but listen, you're going to take this medicine. You need to rest, stay in bed. And in 5 to 7 days, you're going to be feeling well enough that you can be up and you can be out. So you're all right. You know what? 5 days, I'm going to feel like terribly, and then I'm going to be able to get up and get out. Okay, so you know what? There's a light at the end of the tunnel, and you're exactly right, is what makes this so daunting, is because we're not sure, right? We don't know if it's going to be a month or 2 months, or if college football is going to be played in the fall, or if the NFL is going to start in front of fans, or we just don't know. And I think that right there, Rick, is what is so terrifying for so many people, because sports is always that thing where, all right, I had an awful day, I got sports. I didn't sleep well, I still got sports. I'm angry because of sports. And that has been ripped away from us, and I think people are absolutely desperate to get back to those feelings.
Yeah, why do you think when you go get your ACL, I mean, when you blow your ACL, whatever the surgery is, why do you think they give you a time frame? Why do they tell you once you have ACL, it's a 4 to 6 month recovery? Because they know mentally, for you trying to deal with the rehab,
right,
what you have to do to get yourself right. If they just said, well, we don't know. What do you mean you don't know? Well, we'll just play it by ear. Well, that's going to be great for your mental when you have to sit there with
– terrible.
You know, you're sitting in a facility where you're doing, you know, leg raises for 2 hours. And you're like, oh, I don't know when this is going to end. No, you say 4 to 6 months and it gives you something to strive for. So now all of a sudden you're working, okay, you know, the harder I work, the more focused I am on the rehab, maybe I can make it 4 months. Maybe it isn't 6 months. It just gives you that extra little something to get you through.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Having a definitive timeline does something in terms of your mentality. It gives you an objective. It allows you to create realistic expectations in terms of being able to figure out a way where you can get back to what you're used to. And I think we're looking for that in this country right now because we've been thrown out of our routine for a little over a month now, and we really don't have any end in sight in terms of when we can get back to some sense of normalcy. So I get why they have the urgency to get back to live sports, because it is going to help in terms of the overall mental health and the psyche of our country. But there's also economic implications to sports coming back too, because everybody just thinks about the athletes, but you also have to think about the business of sports. And there are a lot of people in support roles in and around sports that are struggling a little bit right now. And so being able to provide, you know, them with opportunities for employment, to get a check and to have some economic relief, that's a big part of this too. I mean, sports represents tens of billions of dollars in our economy. So there's a huge, huge economic implications that go along with getting sports started back up.
All right, let's go to the phones. 800-919-3776. But I think the one thing we all agree on, Rick, is that when sports does come back, and it will come back, there will be no fans for an extended period of time, right? We can all agree on that?
We can all agree on that.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing too, Dave, and this is something that we just touched on, I think one of the – I don't care what you're scared of. It could be anything. You know, I'm scared of Dolphins, whatever it is. Macy. No, but seriously, I mean, one of the scariest things for, I think, everybody is the fear of the unknown, like when you don't know. Like, then that's what makes death so scary, is because what does it mean? Is that just it?
No, we have no idea.
Is there something – you have no idea, and you don't know what's coming for you. That's what makes it scary as hell. Just could
happen. Or what it is, right? I mean, you don't know what's on the other side. Is it just black forever? Do you go to some wonderful life? I mean, I think that's what makes it so terrifying, is you don't know what's next. And it's the same thing with what we're living with right now. We do not know what is next.
Yeah, and it scares the hell out of people. It scares the hell out of me.
And it should. It's scary.
No, I've been witnessing this firsthand. I mean, I have a 5-year-old son. I'm sure your kids are dealing with the same thing. Like his mood over the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 days, probably more than that, he's been a little off. And a lot of it is doing with the fact he's so out of his routine, can't see
his friends.
Well, he did. The weird part is, and this is something that's happened with a couple kids in his class, is even just going on the computer and seeing his friends isn't good enough. Like, he almost doesn't even want to see them because he realizes that he can't be around them, and he can't wrap his head around it. Like, he's having a hard time with it.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Rich Cimini, by the way, going to join us at 11 o'clock this morning. I got into a fight this morning with Ben because he's in 7th grade, and they're not giving him any reading assignments. There's no reading. And I said, well, what have you been reading? He said, I haven't been reading at all. I said, you haven't read in weeks? He's like, no. I said, all right, so here's what we're going to do. I said, after my show today, we're going to pick out a book for you to read. That's not fair. I said, what do you mean it's not fair? He said, I'm not assigned reading. I said, yeah, no, I'm going to assign you reading. He said, well, that's completely unfair because nobody else has to do it. I said, well, you know what? These are strange times. And a book that you agree to, you're going to pick out after the show. So that's just the new normal, right? I mean, you have to do what you think is best for your kids.
Yeah, I mean, this is all uncharted territory for everybody. I mean, having to sit in homeschool your kids and, you know, try to get them to do things that they don't necessarily want to do. No, and then listen, you got to reassert yourself. I mean, this is, I don't care what your, you know, friends are doing. This is what, I'm making the decision that this is what's in your best interest.
Yeah, and I'm not the
best. It's not always easy.
At the asserting yourself, and demanding things, so.
Yeah, but he'll respect you for it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about that.
You're supposed to be his dad. You're not always supposed to be his friend.
That's right.
Just pick, how about you, you know what you should do? Make a deal. Say, listen, you pick a book and we'll both read it. Make it some kind of Giants book.
Why would I have to read? I've been through that.
Well, then you can talk about it. Now all of a sudden you got your own little book club, and because there's no sports, it gives you something to talk about.
It's not a bad idea. All right, let's go to Spike in Jersey. Spike, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning, my friends. I like to check in on everybody at least once a week. You sound like it's getting to you, which it should. Rick, how would it be? What would you give for a good 3-hour and 20-minute commute? And Dave, you'd even watch a giant loss and not feel that bad. And Chris, if there were more branches in your backyard, I went through that yesterday. It's like we're looking for things to do. But again, I'm going to say it like I say it to everybody. You know I'm a supporter of the station 100%, and I appreciate it. I sure hope all you guys, I know you do, Rick, listen to the other programs, because it's just a blessing for all of us to fill the void. It's really tough, I'll tell you. It's really tough, but it's going to get better. I can reiterate that. I got a kick out of it yesterday with the banter between you and Gordon, you guys with Ozark. I won't say anything, Dave, but it's choices we have. I'd like to get a good book to read occasionally. Reading is a lost art now, a lost form of communication. And I heard Michael did something with Ryan Rucco on It's Yes, We're Here, I believe it's called, something like that. And Michael made the point that his wife Jody gets a curriculum because they go to public schools, and she has the burden of going through, I guess his kids are 5 and 7 or something like that. She has to teach 2 different curriculums. So we're all put out, but we have each other. And I don't think we should ever lose sight of that. I think it's wonderful what you guys are doing. And I just, again, hope everyone stays well. There's no way this is going to get fixed without some casualties. Maybe that's the wrong word, but I think that's the right word. Things will never be the same. But, boy, could we appreciate what I reiterated before to each one of you guys. That 3-hour and 20-minute commute and then 2 times in the bottle, Rick, you'll take it right now. Am I right?
Oh, I'd listen 3 times in the bottle if I had to.
Listen, stay well, boys, and don't underestimate what you're doing for so many of us. It doesn't go unnoticed. Have a good day.
Well, that's very nice. We appreciate it. I love Spike. And I know it's important. It's important that we have some semblance of normalcy for everyone to be able to deal with.
But I think Spike touched on one thing, Dave, and that's going to be something that's hard to come to grips with, but it might be our reality, is that we might never get back to what our society was like before coronavirus. We might not ever get back to that, but we wonder what those implications could mean for sports. How we consume sports, whether we're able to go to live sporting events, whether you're going to be able to go and pack 80,000 into a college football stadium. Like, we just have no idea about what it's going to look like on the other side and when that's going to happen. And to Rick's point earlier, because of all of these questions, I think it creates a level of anxiety. And what the president's trying to do, it feels like, is trying to alleviate some of the anxiety that we've all been dealing with because of this pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, you got to find ways to take some kind of positive out of it. I mean, what Spike was talking about, I think it's, I mean, how many times have we heard this in our business, too, as far as, you know, ratings and listeners and everything else? I mean, it has to, you have to make it a part of somebody's routine. We're all creatures of habit. And right now, I mean, our normal is so much different than we're used to that, I mean, it's tough to try to navigate through it. But you got to try to, I mean, try to take as many positives, whatever it ends up being. Come out of this better than when you went into it.
That's right. That's right. Well, whatever it is, and that's what I tell my kid, whatever the thing is that you want to get good at, or book you want to read, or miniseries you want to watch, or skill you want to have, or start baking, or any of those things, there's no reason right now that you shouldn't come out better at that than you went into this thing. And that's the positive you have to take about this, Chris.
No, you're absolutely right, Dave. You got to find a way to try to be constructive, try to be productive. I know we're going to be limited in the things that we can do, because we're supposed to be in our houses, but you got to be creative. You got to try to find ways to break up the monotony of your day. I think it's interesting what the NFL is trying to do with the virtual offseason and having 4 hours of meeting time and the opportunity to have guys work out virtually. Like, it's just, I think it's really interesting, but you're starting to see how these sports teams and these leagues are trying to be creative in terms of conducting business and still adhering to all of the ordinances and trying to be a part of the solution with this pandemic. So, I mean, it's a tough time. Everybody's dealing with it. We're in it together. But I think in terms of what they're trying to do now, what the president is trying to do in organizing this panel, I think it has to do with trying to communicate the right message to people that we're going to get back to some semblance of normalcy sooner as opposed to later.
I hope so. because there's times where you wake up and you're like, oh, when is this going to come back? Where are we? I mean, every day, just it takes forever. And if it's June 15th, it's going to be the day that we see stuff, then let's get to June 15th. I mean, we're desperate. We really are. And I know it sounds like such a selfish, foolish thing to say, Rick, but I'm desperate for sports to return. The longest I've ever had was after 9/11, where you knew that by 9/20 or 9/22 or 9/25 that you would have all your sports back. And right now it's just this empty void of when's it going to come back?
Yeah, sports, and I think everything else, though. I think people everyone is just desperate to have their lives back. I mean, just to have, you know, all the things that maybe you took for granted, have those things back. Being able to just jump in your car, go to the grocery store, or whatever it ends up being. You know, going to dinner with your friends. I mean, all the things that you take for granted. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, the saying exists that necessity is the mother of invention. Like, I mean, change is hard. Change is uncomfortable. But maybe something like this forces not only us, but these leagues to, you know, to be creative, to try new mm-hmm. things that actually, when we do get out of this, make the product better. You know, maybe it snaps some sense into Major League Baseball and, you know, guys being willing to pretty much do anything. Maybe it spawns some great ideas. Maybe guys are mic'd up. Maybe, like, you know what I mean? Like, maybe the NBA does start on Christmas now, from now on, because of this. Like, I mean, I guess that's for me what I choose to kind of focus
and you're right.
on more.
I mean, you are. You're right. I mean, there's a chance that we get out of this and all of a sudden leagues have, because guys aren't going to fight it, you wouldn't think. Guys aren't going to complain. They're not going to run to the media. At least you wouldn't think. So mm-hmm. maybe there is a chance that good things happen. Like, as a result of this awful situation that we're dealing with, that there is a way to streamline a baseball game or make it go quicker or something. And that those are the positives that we take out of this and move forward. And, you know, maybe the baseball season is shortened. That makes it more competitive, or the NBA, like you said, starts on Christmas Day or whatever the case may be. I believe there's going to be a good amount of that as we get out of this that we're in right now.
Well, I think it gives these leagues a natural opportunity to be innovative and to mm-hmm. experiment with their product and see ways that they could potentially improve it, because everybody's going to give them a pass. We all recognize that we're in an unprecedented time. Nobody has ever been through anything like this. So I think that everybody would be more understanding if you tried something and it didn't work out. I mean, we were critical of the horse challenge over the weekend that was broadcast by ESPN. But I mean, it's one of those things where you recognize they're trying something. Even though it didn't work, we applaud the effort because we recognize what they're trying to do. They're trying to provide some entertainment value. They're trying to give folks at home something to watch to be a distraction from the reality that we've been dealing with for the past month. So, like, this is an opportunity for those sports leagues. I hate to frame it that way, but that's what it is. It's a chance for them to tinker with their product and to see what ends up stinking, what ends up sticking, and some of the things that they could potentially implement in the future.
But here's the thing, Rick. How many chances do you ever get to tinker with the product where people are going to be like, oh, you know what? You got to give them a pass. Give them the benefit of the doubt because of a situation that you're dealing with.
Well, you don't.
Exactly.
I mean, you don't. I mean, how many times do we turn on the microphones and yell and scream about, you know, some of the things going on in the NFL or whatever the sport is that drive you crazy? And now maybe this is the opportunity where these leagues are forced to kind of reassess and make some tough changes that people want to see. Man, and here's the thing, though. I mean, the other thing, too, though, to take into account, and I know it seems so trivial to be talking about professional sports now when we're dealing with this pandemic and everything else, but I think Chris touched on an important point, is these are billion-dollar entities. This is big business, right? So we want everyone, especially with unemployment and everything else, I mean, what people are dealing with. You want, when we're through this, everyone to be taken care of. You want everyone to get their jobs back. Well, I mean, part of that, too, is making sure we don't put, you know, these big businesses, these leagues in a situation where they can't afford to hire people back. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of these teams are responsible for people making livings. So, I mean, when they get up and running and we can start, you know, eventually getting people back into stadiums and, you know, we got concession workers and parking attendants and everything else, people will start to get their jobs back. And I mean, it's part of the reality is, I mean, that did, sometimes when you read some of these stories about, you know, money getting kicked back to, you know, airlines or, you know, us trying to get games on and people want to, it's about money. Yeah, well, it is. It's about money for the owners. It's about money for the athletes, but it's also the money that they pay out to their employees as well.
Of course.
That need a living.
Of course. Of course it is. All right, guys. Everyday actions to help prevent the spread of the respiratory diseases. Here's what you can do. You can wash your hands. You can avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, and your mouth. Stay home when you're sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN. I want to remind you can listen to us anywhere you go. Here's how you do it. It's simple. Click listen live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play ESPN New York at 98.7 ESPN New York. We go where you go, and we go to Sal in the car. Sal, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning, guys. Thank you for taking my call this morning.
You're very welcome, Sal. What's on your mind, buddy?
So I just wanted to say, with all the news coming down that they might not have an NBA season, I just wanted to say, I just want your opinion on, if we don't continue the NBA season, would you think that it would be fair to just have all 32 teams have the same odds for the draft? I get the 16 teams that were out of the playoffs, or the worst teams like the Golden State Warriors and the Knicks, wouldn't be fair for them, but it wouldn't be fair to the teams that were in the playoffs, and everybody's going to lose in this no matter what. So that's kind of one way to lessen the blow, no?
I don't think so, no. I mean, because the goal of the draft is to help the teams that are most needy, right, Rick? And whether they won a championship or not, the Lakers are clearly not as needy as the Knicks are, or a team like that. So I don't think that makes any sense. I mean, God forbid the Lakers or the Bucks or someone like that wound up with the number one pick. No, I would not want to move in that direction.
Forget the Lakers or the Bucks. How about if Golden State ends up with the first overall pick?
Yeah, but at least they had an awful season.
Yeah, but it's not the same kind of, put that into context, it's not the same kind of awful season that, you know, the really bad teams had. I mean, they're going to get, I mean, Steph Curry ends up getting hurt. They don't have him for the season, and then Klay Thompson's coming off an ACL. So you can have the first overall pick to mix in with a healthy Klay Thompson and a healthy Steph Curry.
Yes.
And oh, by the way, they added Wiggins. No.
But if you're the Golden State Warriors, I mean, as fate would have it, this was the right year to be a bad team.
Yeah, you're not even going to miss out on a championship, potentially.
Exactly, and your fan base doesn't have to endure, you know, all of the losing because the season right now is being cut short with the pandemic.
I mean, if you're one of these players that's going to get drafted, I mean, you would. I mean, what that caller just suggested, that would be in your best interest. That if all of a sudden now, Anthony Edwards and one of the better teams gets the first overall pick, yeah, I would sign me up for that.
Could you imagine if Wiseman would get drafted by the Golden State Warriors?
Now that could happen. That absolutely could happen. But if you're Anthony Edwards, you could wind up in that situation organically. If the Warriors get the number one pick, then you go to a team that should be a 50-win team right off the bat.
Yeah, which is unusual. Like, I mean, the fact that the Golden State Warriors are in the position that they're in, I mean, I don't think anyone could have forecasted that. They'd be this bad.
No.
This goes to show you, though, when you don't have talent, man. I mean, you can blame the coach all you want. I don't think that... I mean,
Steve Kerr didn't forget how to coach.
Exactly right.
Yeah, it's just that he doesn't have talent. When you don't have two of the top 15 all-time shooters, your team is probably going to struggle.
That's a fair assessment.
Yeah, they were unwatchable.
I will say this though. I mean, at some point, we're going to have to transition into this whole football thing.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the draft coming up and everything else. I know Cincinnati's probably going to take Joe Burrow, but it would scare the hell out of me if anyone in the Cincinnati Bengals organization listening to him talk and how, I mean, unenthusiastic he sounds about being.
Well, why don't we take a listen to one Joe Burrow, since you transitioned over there so nicely? How does that sound to you?
Sounds perfect.
All right. Well, courtesy of 104.5 ESPN in beautiful Baton Rouge, Louisiana, here is Joe Burrow being drafted first. Will certainly be a challenge.
The draft is funny because you don't have, you know, not a lot of professions pick you to, you know, engineers don't get drafted to certain companies. So that's kind of peculiar in, you know, the capitalistic ways of the United States. But that's how it is. And the teams that had the worst year pick at the top, and that's why they're there. So, you know, whatever team I go to, it's going to be a challenge at the beginning. I'm going to have to, you know, persevere through it, and just like I've done in the past. And, you know, you might have a really good first year. You might have a really bad first year. You don't really know, especially without OTAs this year. And you're going to have less time with your team. So there's going to be ups and downs for sure. You're just going to have to battle through it.
I'll tell you what, it's not a vote of confidence that would make you feel like, God, I have nothing but belief in this kid after listening to that soundbite, Rick. I would agree with you.
No, but he won't, and he refuses. He hasn't said it one time. Like, he doesn't even mention ever, like, the Bengals. Never does he mention it. Like, it's whatever team drafts me with the first overall pick.
Yeah,
like,
well, we just, know like, what team is going to draft you.
Well, it's like almost like he's subconsciously trying to talk it to an existence that, like, maybe if I don't say it, maybe someone will trade up and maybe someone will try to trade up and draft.
So if you're playing hide and go seek and you close your eyes, maybe they won't see you? Is that supposed to be the thing?
Yeah, it's like, oh, like, just close your eyes and pretend you're invisible, like my son does.
I mean, here's the thing with Joe Burrow, man. He goes right up to that line. He doesn't cross it, but he goes right up there, and he's letting it be known that he's not enthusiastic about being a Cincinnati Bengal. But the reason that he doesn't go as far as to say that, I think it would be hard for somebody that's in his position after you saw the Heisman speech and how he talked about where he was from to then go and say he doesn't want to go be a part of the Cincinnati community and be a part of trying to resurrect that organization. Like, I just think he's aware of the implications of him potentially saying that he doesn't want to be a Bengal, and that's not a road he wants to go down. But the reality is the Cincinnati Bengals, listening to Zach Taylor, they have no interest in trading the number one overall pick. So he is going to Cincinnati, like it or not.
Here's Mel Kiper saying it's ridiculous to think that Joe Burrow would fail in Cincinnati.
It makes me sick. And I've been screaming about this for months. I hear this garbage. Everybody wants to spew about the Bengals, and it's the horrible place to go. It's awful. You got no chance for a quarterback to have success. What are you, dreaming? You want to just throw out inaccurate information? Fine, but it makes me sick. The 81 and 88 may be too long ago, but they won in 81 with Kenny Anderson, 88 with Boomer Esiason. If that's too far removed, fine. Let's fast forward to 2011, 2015. That's not 100 years ago, guys. Okay, they had five straight winning seasons, five straight playoff appearances. Should have beat Pittsburgh. It was a penalty late that cost them that opportunity. They had an 11 and 12 win season mixed in to those five straight years of getting to the playoffs. Okay, and with Carson Palmer, he got hurt in a playoff game where they may have won that game. Andy Dalton had success. So this notion that Joe Burrow is going to a place that's never won, never had success, never had a quarterback do anything is utterly ridiculous.
All right, when he makes his key point, guys, make sure you play the music right under him, and that's courtesy of Get Up This Morning. But here's the thing. You don't win a playoff game in 30-plus years, and I think we are given the right to bash the organization. They are a bad organization. It doesn't mean that Joe Burrow can't go there and have success. I think that he absolutely can. It means that he's in a more difficult position than if he went to a more functional football team.
Dave, they haven't won a playoff game since the start of modern free agency.
Yeah.
They haven't. I mean, modern free agency started in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
The last time they won a playoff game was what, 89?
89.
Whatever it was, it's unbelievable. So I can understand why Joe Burrow would have a little bit of trepidation just knowing how the Bengals have operated. They're notoriously cheap. They don't like to spend money. But the one thing I will say is this offseason, they spent $100 million in free agency. They have spent money on the team, and it feels like it's in preparation for trying to usher in a new era of Bengals football, and that's starting with Joe Burrow being the number one overall pick in a little over a week. So, I mean, they went out, they signed DJ Reader to play his nose tackle, they revamped their secondary, they brought in Mackenzie Alexander and Trey Waynes and Von Bell. So, I mean, I say it all the time, a young quarterback's best friend is a really good defense, a unit that can get extra possessions and field position for him. So hopefully that's what the Bengals are thinking. But again, Dave, when you start looking at the history of the organization, it just feels like there's a lot stacked against Joe Burrow in terms of him having success in the NFL if he goes to Cincinnati.
Yeah, I think at a certain point, I mean, the stink of the organization eventually ends up on you. I mean, I think you're seeing that in Detroit right now. I mean, Matt Stafford's a good quarterback.
Very good.
But as far as everyone's concerned, he hasn't lived up to expectations. They haven't done a great job of supporting him either. But people will point to the player. I mean, Chris is exactly right. I mean, it's going to be difficult on Joe Burrow. It's going to make him reaching his ceiling that much more difficult than if he went to, you know, a team that was hell-bent on winning and it was well-run.
Almost like anywhere, really, you could say.
Well, but I understand what Mel is saying, and I appreciate his passion. But this isn't just random people saying this stuff. It isn't random people, you know, telling Joe Burrow that he shouldn't want to be drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals. This is Carson Palmer, who played for the Cincinnati Bengals, telling him this. So firsthand experience, this is how I felt being drafted there and playing there. And I didn't, you know, I never felt like I reached my potential because of where I was drafted. I mean, that's pretty powerful stuff, man.
And then, oh, by the way, you're going to the AFC North and two of the most well-run organizations, not only in the NFL, but in sports, period, in the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens. So that's what you're going to be competing against. Four games every single year. So, I mean, it's not going to be easy for Joe Burrow. It's not. We'll see if the kid can elevate everybody around him, all of the players that they have on the team currently, and then everybody in the organization in terms of having a new standard and having greater expectations. But, I mean, Dave, a big part of this is making sure that the people are in place to properly develop players once they get to the professional ranks. And especially in football and with Cincinnati, you can't say that they've always done that.
No. In fact, you could say they typically haven't done that. And if he's going to succeed, it might be in spite of the organization, right? Like, he might be so good, and maybe, and I don't know that this is the case, but he might be so good that as bad as they are, he might just outdistance that. But I don't know that that's the case, and I understand the trepidation. And let's be fair, if you were a player that could be drafted in the top five, would you want to go to Cincinnati? And the answer for, I think, all of us is no.
No, I wouldn't want to go to Cincinnati. And no. I heard Boomer Esiason said yesterday, I think it was, that Joe Burrow could be the LeBron James for the Cincinnati Bengals. Kind of like what LeBron was for the Cavs. They're saying Joe Burrow could be that for the Bengals. To that, I would say this. LeBron James was so good. Like, the talent was so great that it was almost a situation that it couldn't miss. Like, it didn't matter what the organization had around him. He was going to elevate that team.
In fact, look what they had around him. They had some of the worst players you've ever seen, and they went to the NBA Finals. I mean,
it was terrible, Dave. But football is a different sport than basketball. We all know that. But then also, you look at Joe Burrow from a talent standpoint. I mean, clearly the kid has got talent. He put together one of the greatest seasons we've ever seen from a college football quarterback. But this is also the same kid that couldn't get on the field at Ohio State. So, I mean, you're wondering if the talent is great enough to overcome all of those obstacles that it feels like would be in the way of his success going to an organization like the Bengals.
Yeah, there are only so many players. I mean, you can go down the list. I mean, you probably count them on your – I mean, there are only a handful of quarterbacks, I don't care who it is, that have that kind of talent. I mean, there's only so many, you know, Andrew Luck, John – I mean, there's only so many of those guys. And even LeBron James. I mean, you heard Bill Laimbeer said he's the greatest basketball player that ever lived. Refresh my memory. Where did he win his first couple championships?
Miami.
Okay, because even he realized that in Cleveland, because it's not a well-run organization and him being at the mercy of the people running it, that his ceiling, well, he'd never reached a ceiling there as being a champion. They couldn't support his talent.
Mm-hmm.
So he left, and then when he finally, you know, won his two championships, made the decision to come back. And even then, to win that championship, he had to drag that team to the win.
Yeah, it was one of the greatest performances we've ever seen.
Yeah, because they were down 3-1, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So, I mean, that just goes to show you, man. I mean, it's going to be tough for Joe Burrow. I wish the kid all the success. I hope it works out for him. But, I mean, it's just to overcome the ineptitude that has been the Cincinnati Bengals for the past three decades. I mean, it's going to take a special player. Maybe he's got it. I mean, not too many quarterbacks have won a Heisman and a national championship in the same season. I think it's him and Cam Newton and nobody else. So, I mean, we'll see if the kid is capable of being able to get it done.
Do you think that Pat Mahomes, Rick, would be Pat Mahomes on the Cincinnati Bengals?
No. No, he'd be good, but he wouldn't be. I mean, he wouldn't have won an MVP in his second year and then, you know, turned around and won a Super Bowl in his third year. I mean, listen, it's hard enough, period, to get to the level that someone like Pat Mahomes is at. Then all of a sudden you couple that with the fact that you're on a poorly run team that doesn't have a ton of talent. And, oh, by the way, you have the most ridiculous set of expectations put on you because you're the first overall pick and you're from the area. I mean, listen, man, when it's all said and done and your career is over, as cool as it is to be the first overall pick, you'd trade that in a heartbeat if someone told you that, you know, you'd win multiple, you'd be a second round pick or a third round pick that, you know, under promised, overachieved and won two championships. You'd take that in a second.
Rico, I know you're speaking from experience, but it's got to be pretty cool being the number one overall pick, though. That's got to be pretty cool.
Well, it is for a second until all of a sudden you realize, I mean, the weight of the expectations. Like, you're just, I mean, now all of a sudden, you know, you're the guy who's going to turn this whole thing around in a team sport. It's still, I mean, yep. At the end of the day, this isn't tennis. It's not golf. Like, it's a team sport. You're at the mercy of the people around you. Like, as good as Joe Burrow can be, I mean, if he doesn't have good wide receivers, he doesn't have a good offensive line, what the hell good is his talent if he can't utilize it?
It's true. It's true. All right, today on ESPN Daily, Wright Thompson was set to profile Clayton Kershaw ahead of the 2020 baseball season. They spent the day together just as spring training got shut down, and Thompson witnessed firsthand as Kershaw reacted to the news that MLB would delay the season. Thompson tells the story of Kershaw's fate in baseball through the lens of what this stall time means for his life and legacy. That's on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. I know today's not my hot take day. It's you, right, Chris? You got your hot take today?
I do have my hot take, Dave. I gave you a little bit of an idea of where I was going with it. So you guys are probably a little bit ahead of the game. I'm still going to give you guys your five guesses apiece, but I've got my hot take ready to go, locked and loaded.
All right, we'll do that in the 12 o'clock hour. Rich Cimini right off the top at 11 o'clock. We'll get into the Cowboys-Dak Prescott situation. Let's go to our buddy who was, and I think admittedly so, Andy and Merrick, who, I mean, yesterday was clearly not your finest day, right, Andy?
Upon proper reflection, yesterday's questions were not my best work.
But everybody has days at the office where they're not great, and what do? They rebound, and that's what we expect from you today.
That's what we're going to do. I'm going to try to be better, starting with the big man.
Let's go, Andy.
2005 NFL draft. You remember it well, I hope.
I do.
Your draft. Aaron Rodgers was the premier sort of pick out of that. 364 career touchdowns. My question to you, Mr. Canty, is what quarterback drafted in 2005 is number two in career touchdowns?
That is a good one.
That is a nice question.
So obviously it's going to be somebody that's been around a lot. It would be too obvious if it was Alex Smith, though.
That would be too obvious.
let me ask you this question. Did he go to the Ivy League?
Oh, boy, you are red hot.
Yeah, it would be the guy that had the highest wonder look score who's still quarterbacking in the NFL today. I'm going to go with Ryan Fitzpatrick from the Miami Dolphins.
Nice.
Amish Rifle is correct.
pretty good.
All right, very, Rick, very nice. Nicely done, Chris. Good job.
Rick, your question yesterday was atrocious. I will make it up to you.
Awful.
Horrendous. Awful. Admittedly so. So I gave Dave the question the other day about who was the last punter or kicker the Giants had drafted, the whole Matt Dodge incident. My question to you today, Mr. DiPietro, is when was the last time the Jets selected a kicker or punter in the draft?
Ooh. Last time they selected a kicker or a punter. I think the last one they selected was, I want to say it was a punter. I'm going to go with Lock Edwards in 2016.
I don't have that. I have Mike Nugent in 2005.
I believe you're wrong, Andy.
Yes.
Oh. Yes.
Retribution.
I believe you're wrong.
2016?
I believe Lock Edwards was a seventh round pick by the Jets.
Yes, Dave. Thank you.
Corrected.
There you
Rick,
go.
On point.
My man.
Oh, my God. My stats and information department's going to get it.
I mean, I don't know what happens now. Honestly, I don't know how we move forward, Andy. I mean, we look at you as this beacon of light and intelligence and correct analysis and questions and to be wrong. So horribly wrong, Andy.
Oh, blatantly wrong. Oh, my goodness. Dave, I'm hesitant to give you your question.
I'm hesitant to take it.
That said, 2003, the Giants selected Vasante Shenko, tight end in the third round. What college did he go to?
Morgan State.
Nicely done, Dave.
Yeah, he was a terrific player.
I'll be better tomorrow, guys. Stay healthy.
All right, thank you, Andy. I mean, the questions were better today, but his lack of correct answer was not good. But I had your back there, Rick.
No, you're the best. I think what he here's what happened. I think he was almost trying to facilitate me getting it right, and then he overlooked the fact that Edwards was drafted in 2016.
Well, let's be honest. How many people watched the draft through the seventh round?
We will this year.
No, I mean, we will this year.
We will.
Touche, Dave. Touche.
That Saturday's going to be one hell of a Saturday. Can't wait for that. Rounds four. Be all dialed in.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.